Good morning. I want to call the Customer Service and Operations Committee to order. The agenda is before us. Are there any questions? Hearing no questions, any objections? Without objection, the agenda is approved. This morning, we have two items before us, and one is an action, and the other is information. And Mr. Rakeway is going to begin, and as he begins, I want to note that we've had an awful lot of outreach that has taken place on this. Some of the folks that are participants are in the room today, and we're glad that they're here. Staff gathered comments from customers in a number of different ways, and I think the formal process plus the other surveys and other tools that they use were very helpful for the community. Also with Jack is Shyam Cannon, and Managing Director of Planning, and he will walk us through the Title VI item that is a part of this. With that, I am going to turn it over to Mr. Reed.
Thank you, Madam.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Did I miss the minutes? That is a motion that we need. Mr. Second. Downey moved. Mr. Bolger second. All those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed. Thank you very much, Mr. Downey.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you. As you say, Ms. Hudgens, we had a great turnout from the public and a lot of involvement with the public and the jurisdictions in regards to the proposed bus service changes. As you recall, we came to you in July with a recommendation to have a public hearing on some service changes that we believe will improve efficiency and on-time performance and customer satisfaction. This is a process that is similar to the one that we used the last 2 years. However, this year, because of Title VI, we also included potential service changes for the remainder of FY14 and some changes for possibilities for the beginning of FY15. Today we're asking for board approval to amend the tariff related to two items, to modify some bus service changes and to approve the Title VI equity analysis. The proposed changes that we've worked through with from the input that we received from the public, and we'll speak to the volume of public input, which is the greatest number of input that we've received over the last few years, has improved service on about 49 current routes, improves reliability, travel time, and expands service on six of our high-volume corridors. The Title VI, which is a component of this process, the proposed changes do meet the test for Title VI compliance, and Sean will speak to that when I finish my comments, and we'll get back to you with that. Again, as Ms. Hudgens, as you mentioned about the outreach, we had six public hearings. We had 9 pop-up meetings with several groups, 7 community meetings, 2,258 participants provided input through the online survey, and we had an additional 1,500 individuals supplying us written comments that we were able to evaluate in this process. I think we really feel that we reached out, got a lot of good input, and had a lot of good discussion, and it spoke to a number of many items. So in summary of some of the major issues that we discussed at these public hearings, I'd like to just mention a few. One is, you know, when we talk about cost-neutral changes, we do talk about elimination versus additions. We did eliminate or proposing to eliminate one route in the district, the M2. The M2 has very poor ridership, only 63 people a day, a 7% fare box recovery, and they have, and the riders on this route have the options of the M6, the V5, the F14, and the 39. So we're not taking service away from them; we're just reducing the expense on a very inefficient route, and we're pleased to propose that. The 30 lines is a major line from Northwest Washington to Southeast, provides a tremendous amount of service. I'm guessing 18 to 20,000 riders a day. We have not taken away the one seat ride from one end to the other, but we have the option here of improving on-time performance from the Northwest to the city's core by incorporating a new route, and we think that that's very beneficial. I believe we have the support of the jurisdiction to do that. There's been a lot of discussion about the NH1. You know, according to the articles, we were going to eliminate the route. That isn't technically true. We thought we were going to trade the route with the bus from Prince George's County. But after much discussion with the public and with the jurisdictions, the major concern was more service to National Harbor and to, especially with the outlet malls soon coming on board. So the resolution that we have and proposal that we have is to retain the NH1 service between National Harbor and Branch Avenue, and then to expand service in the early morning and late night hours, primarily for the workers at these locations. And the best way to do that is to provide the service to Southern Avenue. So the early morning and late night service, a few trips will go to Southern Avenue, which allows better connections with other buses and also a little later connection with the Green Line for the last train at the night. So we think that we've been able to adapt the service, and as a result of this recommendation, the state has authorized an additional payment of $84,000, which I believe is on the consent agenda for a budget amendment for the board meeting coming this month. The 5A was another item that was on the agenda, that there were proposals to eliminate the route as a result of the Silver Line being extended or created out to Wheely. 80% of the people that commented on the 5A strongly recommended that the route stay in place at least until the rail line is complete all the way to the airport. Again, this route is our most cost-efficient route, 85% fare box recovery, so our recommendation is to retain the service as it is. However, the comments were very valid that they felt that the location of the terminal at Lafont Plaza was not the most efficient, so we're going to make some changes at Lafont to provide a better service. Also, I'd add that I think we had a lot of conversations and on the Route 74. There were some proposed changes for 74, which was the replacement route for this DC circulator in Southwest Washington. I think the comments from the public was that leave the service alone. However, we'd like to have you extend it rather than change it. There's no recommendation to make the extensions, but I think we'll be working with the district to see if some things are possible to provide better service for these customers. So there's really no change to the 74. And I do want to mention that when we opened, Ms. Porter, when we opened the K-9, we knew that it had to be extended, and part of our FY14 service changes are recommending that extension that would take place this December. So I think those are the kind of the major routes that we had involvement in. This chart, and I do have to apologize, this is a revised chart from the one that you had mailed to you. When we were putting the numbers together, the first two columns are essentially the, and have not changed, is what we were able to reduce in the jurisdictions and what we could add back in so that there is a cost-neutral approach. And as you can see at the bottom, we were able to reduce services by $2.5 million, and we've reinvested those at $2.5 million. And so that meets the criteria of our primary objective in the process. The next column, the next two columns, relate to FY14. We have money left in our 14 budget that we would implement services in December and a few in March. And as when we did the calculations, we also had money listed in a third column for FY15. And we, you know, in all the movement of the discussions, we had some 15 money in 14, so we've taken that out. And so this is the revised chart of investments that we pose and plan to make in December and March for FY14. So there's no dollars now included that were essentially in here for 15. So this is the answer. So apologize for that. The tariff changes, we had two tariff changes proposed. One is to prohibit smoking at WMATA bus stops. We had essentially three comments on that, two in favor of the change or for the proposal and one against. And also one covering off-board fare collection and fare evasion, and I think my recall is we didn't have any comments on that one, maybe one. So we think that those certainly, as recommended, are should be approved. And before I make a recommendation, I turn it over to Sham to let him comment on the Title VI process that has taken place during this review over the last couple of months.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ripa. Thank you, Madam Chair. If we might advance just two slides forward. We're in the appendix now. We'll walk this very quickly just to see the application of the Title VI threshold which the board did approve in the last full board meeting. And as a reprise of what the methodology is, remember that what we take a look at is to take a look within the mode, the extent to which how many riders per day are impacted, and the standard that we've adopted allows us to bypass the following conundrum. We would want to have a standard that is not too permissive at a large level or too restrictive at a small level. And so remember, what we're evaluating here is the extent to which either minority or low-income riders experience a benefit or a disbenefit, which is new, that is a wider margin from the system average in terms of the total composition of their ridership within that mode within the system. So to boil that down, here what we're taking a look at, we analyze the actual trips that would be impacted. We understand exactly what percentage of the trips, trip riders would be minority and low income, and is the difference between those who are impacted that are minority and low income versus the trips that are impacted who are non-minority and non-low income more than a percentage threshold different than the system as a whole within the mode. So with that as a reprise of what we're using, let's go to the next slide. In this case, the two different thresholds that we're applying are the 8% and 7%. And the reason for that is that the total number of trips that would be disbenefited in terms of this particular proposal is roughly 5,000 trips per day, which would fall in the top category up to 10,000 trips per day impacted, so we use the 8% threshold. And then the total number of trips that would benefit were somewhere in the order of 13,000 trips per day, and so we use the 7% threshold, and that becomes, again, the distance from the mode average beyond which we would have an equity consideration that would need to be dealt with. So if you go to the next slide, what we arrive at, take a look solely at our minority riders, and we find that for both those who are disbenefiting, again, using that 8%, and those who are benefiting, again, using that 7%, neither one of those percentage differences exceed the threshold that was approved by the board last month. And so in that respect, there is not a disparate impact upon our minority riders. Go to the next slide. And we see our low-income riders, again, the disbenefiting riders, it's 0.5%, far below that 8% threshold. And then again, our benefiting riders, the 6.1% difference, larger, but still below that 7% threshold that we had established as the threshold beyond which we would have an equity consideration. So for those reasons, go to the final slide. We did not find either disparate impact or disproportionate burden as part of this package of bus service changes.
So as a result of the Title VI review and comments and the public hearing comments and the involvement of the jurisdictions and staff, the recommendation to the committee is to, and then to forward to the board, would be to amend the tariff related to the non-smoking and off-board fare collection items, to modify the bus service changes as are proposed in your packet, and to approve the Title VI equity analysis. And Sham and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Let us begin maybe by putting a motion on the table, and then we can have discussion. Do we have a motion? Mr. Bulger seconding. Discussion. Ms. Hines and then Ms. Bulger.
So, Sham, I just have a question about what your calculation is on. I'm looking at the service impacts chart, the one that you went through where you show the neutral and then the PCN initiatives and the state of good repair initiatives or good operations, SOGL, right? So back a couple more slides from this. Do you do the calculation on all of those as a package? I just wanted to make sure we all understood. So it's not just the neutral stuff. It's looking at everything we're going to do in fiscal year 14 to make changes to bus service. That's where the calculation occurs.
That's correct. So the analysis is conducted on the package of service changes and the extent to which those changes may or may not have impacts that exceed these thresholds. Correct.
Okay, so we're looking at the regional impacts of a whole year's worth of adjustments.
That's correct. Against the average daily ridership of bus as a mode as a whole.
Okay.
The guidance does allow us, in fact, asks us to consider within the mode if we're making mode specific changes.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful.
Can we go to page 24, tab 3, action item, where Jack was discussing the DC routes? And, Madam Chairman, I'd like to make a suggestion that we strike under the Route 74 Convention Center of the National Park, where we say maintain current services. Jack pointed out, strike, seek additional resources to respond to customer requests, extend Route 74 to 7th and O Street Northwest, strike, seek, ending with Northwest.
Okay, would you give me your page number again? Because I'm talking about
24.
Okay.
If we could get the tab up, it'd be great on the screen. It's tab 3, where we discussed, as Jack pointed out, the routes that were discussed. And I'm talking about Route 74.
Okay. Is there, and so we want to, are there any objections to that? Okay.
From the staff standpoint, no. No, this is what we were hearing at the public hearings. I think Mr. Walter heard it himself, but it doesn't need to be included in this package. Certainly it's an item that can always be discussed.
Thank you. So that'll be deleted.
Okay.
Thank
Without
you.
Objections, then.
Yes, Madam Chair, I offer an amendment to Maryland, page 1 of 1, which is page 5 of the resolution, and page 28 of the packet of attachment A of the resolution for the service recommendations for Bowie Crofton. Our request is that it read, do not make changes at this time, and that the effective date of the entry would be amended to read NA. This would allow the Maryland Department of Transportation and Prince George's government additional time to consider the proposal as part of a comprehensive look at how to best improve bus service in the county and through the standard FY15 budget process. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Bowman. Any questions?
Do you need me to make the motion? I would be happy to do that.
Yes, I'm sorry, that's right.
Yes.
Okay, so it's a motion and approved. I moved a further discussion on it. Let us then move to amend the motion. Question, Mr. Downey?
If this change is made, are we still in balance with respect to Title VI and to the financial considerations?
And from our interest, it keeps it on the table for discussion, and that's what's important, so that we can have continued discussions with the state and the jurisdictions. So it's not an issue.
Any other discussion regarding that item? So that is an amendment to the motion. All those in favor and opposed? The motion has been amended to include the Maryland item. Any other discussion on the item before us for approval? With that, all those in favor of the motion? And opposed? Silence. Is that?
Could I make one comment?
I will consider that it is part of the discussion.
I had an earlier conversation in
is
the year.
Pertinent to the motion to move?
Yes.
Okay.
About a lack of turnout at public hearings, and the public hearing that I chaired in Southwest had over 100 people and 35 attendees. I think the public hearing process on this set of changes was preceded by far broader outreach to the community, yielding a lot more participation, which I think makes for a much stronger set of decisions about these kinds of adjustments than when we used to have two or three people show up at the hearing. So I wanted to recognize the staff's work about getting the communities involved, and this was a far better process than we'd experienced before. So thanks to everybody.
Thank you. And that is not pertinent. All those in favor and opposed. Thank you very much. Thank you, staff. And this is a very important process, that this is non-budget related, but it's improvement of services for our customers. The next item is an information item. Mr.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Hudgens. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to discuss the progress on the Silver Line and our continuing efforts to establish revenue service. The extension of the Metrorail system is an important component of the overall regional transportation network, and I know this will be very successful in giving smart economic growth and also reducing traffic congestion out there. Any project of this size is much like a marathon, and while I personally have never run 26 miles, I can imagine that the last half mile is the hardest. I know that may be hard for some to believe, but 2009, this is when construction started, when Metro has been working cooperatively with MWOT by ensuring that designs and construction met our standards and would provide a reliable and safe ride for our customers. It has not always been easy, but it has been productive. We continue with quality inspections and are now mostly engaged in oversight and assisting with testing of the various systems. We've engaged our equipment, notably the track geometry vehicle, to provide specification checks and dynamic testing and to establish baseline controls for the right-of-way. We also have provided over 40 rail cars to assist in safe braking tests, and our ATC engineers and power engineers have worked closely with DTP systems experts to complete testing within an efficient time frame. Beginning in 2012, we started work on a number of initiatives to allow us to transition to revenue service. This included establishing station names, getting the traffic pattern set with Rush Plus service, and also the staffing plans and funding for early hiring. This was important because we needed to bring in maintenance staff and train them on ATC, railroad power systems, and automatic fare collection. Having early hiring initiatives allowed us to train and familiarize these new technicians on the types of systems they would be maintaining. Also important was the Dulles Project Office's rail activation plan. This gave us a roadmap to completion and defined all of those tasks and the responsible parties required to get this project to where we can carry passengers. 2013 continues to be a very busy year for us as we prepare for opening. The fleet management plan was approved by the FTA, and this plan outlines the need for us to increase our rail car availability. We need 954 rail cars to fully support Silver Line service, and our current daily car counts for revenue service average 925 cars. However, in addition to those, we do have the 40 cars which are supplied to the Silver Line testing, and these will be put back into our revenue service inventory. I am very confident that we will consistently be able to support the Silver Line service with the necessary rail cars until the 7,000 series cars arrive. Note that extensive efforts with testing continue, which Metro personnel support, and also the tie-in to the existing systems. This Silver Line project required 24 shutdowns. Let me say that again. Required 24 shutdowns and 17 single-track events to tie the extension in with the existing Orange Line. Signage, graphics, and systems maps have all been determined and are being deployed. I do want to spend a few moments on ORD, or Operational Readiness Date. There has been much conversation about substantial completion and MWOT turning the property over to Metro after substantial completion. Understand that substantial completion is a contractual requirement between MWOT and their contractor. It is not an obligation of Metro. We are concerned with what is called operation readiness. And we define that date based on a number of items, only part of which is substantial completion. Our operating readiness is the date at which we have determined that the railroad is ready for service. Operational readiness includes requirements outside of contractual substantial completion determination. Requirements such as completion of critical punch list items, property transfers, maintenance agreements, easement permits, training, spare parts, warranty transfers, and also safety and security certification. There is a litany of items outside of substantial completion which are necessary for us to have been executed or be fully ready to be executed prior to us establishing ORD. What we have been doing is working closely with MWOT to shorten that time frame between substantial completion and ORD by working many of these tasks in parallel and helping to manage the testing, maintaining negotiations with all of the property owners to ensure that everybody's mutual interests are protected, and ensuring indemnification and property interests are fully executable. Essentially, ORD is when we are comfortable that the GM can certify to the board that all conditions required for acceptance can be fully satisfied. So where are we with our readiness? Staffing, and we certainly thank the board for approving early staffing. We are in great shape with the majority of maintenance forces engaged and ready. The operations personnel, station managers, and train operators are right on schedule, as can be seen with the remainder of the training classes, which will be completed by the end of the year. Customer marketing. Lynn gave a detailed and informative presentation in September on a marketing campaign, which is fully developed and ready to be deployed once definitive revenue dates have been established. This campaign will be a multimedia approach and will work to not only provide information to existing riders, but also to generate new rail ridership and new revenue. This illustrates the service plan that has been approved. Note that the 26 trains through the Roslyn Tunnel is the maximum capacity that can be accomplished through this interline connection. Service will run to the end of the blue line, terminating at Largo Station. Bus service plans have been developed, and local jurisdictional bus service will be established to provide connectivity. Metrobus and other bus carrier route changes have been approved by the board, and detailed schedules have been finalized. These include the Fairfax Connector, Loudoun and Prince William counties, and the Washington Flyer. Our metro drivers are being hired and trained. Our bus bay assignments have been developed and will be finalized after ORD. Public information on specific bus changes will be incorporated into the customer information and marketing package and will be available for riders on our silverlinemetro.com website. Certainly, the training of local emergency personnel is critical, and the Transit Police Office, Office of Emergency Management, and Safety have been working very, very closely with the jurisdictions to allow for tabletop exercises and physical characteristic awareness. Actual on-track emergency exercises will take place between ORD and Revenue Service, and this is critical to the safety and security of the system. System testing. Major amounts of work are ongoing, and WMATA is very involved in systems testing. We are actively engaged from all levels of the organization to assure a complete, comprehensive, and integrated testing program that focuses on safety and functionality. Our engineers and maintenance personnel have lent equipment and their expertise to the systems testing, and we continue to work closely with MWA and DTP to ensure that this rail network will continue to be safe and reliable for our passengers. A critical step in reaching acceptance is the turnover to Metro of spare parts and warranties. Our quality assurance group is working closely with MWA to collect and document all warranties and have them accessible in the Maximo database. This is our maintenance management tool. This ensures that we can recover any costs under the warranty items. Again, ORD requires completion of many activities to ensure the system is ready for board acceptance. While some of the conditions may not be fully executed at the time of ORD determination, we will ensure that they will be at a substantial point of execution. Critical in all of this is the safety and security certification. As part of the FTA requirements, the safety and security certification provides a tremendous tool to determine system readiness. This certification documents that all the necessary design, construction, and test elements have been properly analyzed, reviewed, constructed, and tested, and with the corresponding physical documentation that the system is in accordance with our approved specifications and contract documents. Acceptance requires much action, review, approvals, testing, and construction. Note that the automatic fare collection was procured and installed by WMATA forces. ROCC interfaces were developed and implemented by our IT department. Our safety and RWP manuals are being revised and led by Charlie Jzidich of our rail operations group. Emergency response maps were produced by our engineering department, and the Dulles Project Office has been facilitating and coordinating these efforts through the rail activation plan. This gave us the schedules and the responsible parties to determine ORD, which is the basis for satisfying the 8 established conditions which must be met for board acceptance. Note that 4 of these have already been certified, and the 4 remaining include determination of project completion, conveyance of the property, indemnification obligations, which will not incur liability, and land use permitting approvals. You know, we continue to work very, very closely with MWA to achieve these objectives as quickly as possible, but without compromising the safety, reliability, and operational goals of the Silver Line extension. Thanks, and if there's any questions, I'll certainly be happy to answer any of them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Troop, and I think there will be some questions, and I also want to note that there will be, we will have a more extensive discussion regarding safety and the Safety Committee, but at this time, I'll start with Mr. Giancola.
Thank you.
Thank you for the briefing. Over the last 5 weeks, I've become very sensitized to the accuracy of websites and the use of websites. And are we ready on our website with all these changes as well?
Yes, we will be ready with our websites.
We will be ready.
We will be ready. Yeah, when we understand.
So when I go in and plan my trip, I'll be able to see Silver Line and other kinds of.
Yes, it's ready to be fully deployed.
All right.
Yes,
Mr. Bulger.
Thank you, Rob. I just wanted to point out to my fellow board members that many of us went on a Silver Line tour. Tony, I understand you were under the weather, and we missed you. Rob was with us and other staff and Jim and others, and it was very revealing, particularly in Fairfax County, my old haunt a long time ago, what's being built and what's being ready to be transferred over to Metro. For those of you who haven't been able to go on the Silver Line tour, you may want to consider it was only about a couple hours, I think, Rob, that we were actually in play, but very revealing. Lots of development opportunities yet to come. I hope that the local governments are spurred to develop in and around many of these stations that are pretty interesting looking architecturally, but have a lot of potential in and around the half a mile, quarter mile of the new stations. Although we have a few that are in the middle of a freeway, but what's interesting to me was the archways and walkways to get across these freeways, which are formidable, coming from the District of Columbia, do add some architectural possibilities to get to the development sites that are under consideration and on the line. So,
any other questions? Ms. Hines, Mr. Goldman.
I really appreciate this. This is an amazing amount of moving parts, and it certainly is engaging such a significant set of our organization as well as M1, the contractor. So, you know, thank you for all the care that everybody here is taking. My concern goes back to what's going to be on the website relative to not only the new stations but to everything that's along the Silver Line. And we had a brief conversation about that a month or two ago, but as a jurisdiction, you know, that has a lot of things located at our metro steps that will now be accessible in ways they haven't been before to new parts of the community, I am curious about that, and you know, Lynn, whatever you can tell us, and then maybe there's some way some of us could take a look at whatever you're planning so that things are not missed in our jurisdictions.
Sure. I guess I would point to a couple of opportunities. Today, I'm not sure if we can bring it up because we hadn't planned to, but it might get in the way of Rob's PowerPoint. But today we refreshed the SilverLineMetro.com website, so you can go on that and see more moving parts, more finalized pictures. This progress has been made since July, and I would invite everybody to go to SilverLineMetro.com and to see that getting added to and becoming richer as we get closer to ORD. We continue to encourage, as we go out in the community, the destinations who want to be associated with the Silver Line to indicate as such so that we can show them on interactive maps on the site so that we can promote them throughout our marketing collateral materials. Nice try, Angel. I appreciate it. I secure firewall. With respect to WMATA.com, so the source, the data source for the trip planning, to Mr. Giancola's point, I think who asked the question, is the same. So once the bus schedules with the new routes are encoded, once the new train service is input, all of that trip planning functionality will be shared between WMATA.com and SilverLineMetro.com. So that's on the website front. But there are so many other marketing tools where we're going to be able to promote all the destinations throughout the region on the Silver Line. One example of that is a video that my team is producing. Went through the second round on the script. We're going to be finalizing. And in talking about that, we're going to be showing people in 3 or 4 minutes, and this will be available on YouTube and through the websites and in the communities as we promote the service, from Largo to Reston and everything in between, the great destinations that the Silver Line reaches. And so we talked about what we would like to highlight along the way, and we're certainly open to any suggestions the board may have on that.
Well, I would encourage folks to think about reaching out to our various economic development agencies in our jurisdictions, just to make sure that you're aligned with them in terms of these kinds of things a little bit. And I, as I say, I've been talking to people in my jurisdiction. It's important to us that Arlington be well represented in this as it moves.
Absolutely, we'll do that. And we will talk to the economic development folks. We're also going out to the private sector business leaders. I'm engaged, scheduled to be out with the Fairfax Chamber soon and others. So we are reaching far and wide, and Arlington is certainly on our list.
Right. Well, and I would also say, you know, look at our momentum partners and make sure that we're saying to them, you know, here's an opportunity. Another reason you should partner with us is it gets you in on the ground floor on this kind of a conversation.
So that's a great suggestion, and Barbara has scheduled us to make that presentation on the next champions briefing.
Much of that is starting to happen in lots of places. Even though we are not open, a lot of places already are starting those. The Silver Line is here and welcome, and the businesses are involved. So I think the message has been heard, and I think it's to plant it into the website and the communication piece, and that's what we've been working on. And now let's go to Mr. Goldman and then Mr. Dykes for other comments.
Mr. Troop, thank you for that presentation. This is a real eye-opener for someone who was not here at the start of this effort, not present at the creation. Not sure if any of my colleagues on the board were, but here we are coming close to the end date. A question on the operational readiness date on the slide that was on before we switched back. There were a number of things that still have to happen on or before the operational readiness date. Do any of those things require any board action before the operational date happens and WMATA actually takes possession of the Silver Line?
No, there are no board action requirements for us to make a determination of OR date.
And since I wasn't here, why is that?
Safety certification.
There is safety certification. That's, I don't believe, a board action. The board has to act to accept the facility, and that will be after ORD, after we've gone through our own drills and further operational functional testing, then I will come to the board recommending acceptance of the facility. And at that point, the board hopefully accepts the facility and we set the date for opening.
And so that date that you just mentioned is after the operational readiness date?
Yes. The operational readiness date is in the agreement between us and MWA. And that's just when they said, and we agree that it's ready to go into operation, but we also, per agreement, have 90 days in which to do the drills, do the functional run simulations, all that sort of thing. And then we come for acceptance.
Right. So the operational date is a staff function. It's functioned by the general manager. And will there be some public announcement when that occurs?
Oh, I'm sure there will be.
And the final question is, the operational readiness date is obviously not the date when revenue service begins. What's the time period between the operational readiness date and the actual start of revenue service? The public might be interested in
our,
that kind of information.
Our agreement with MWA is that within 90 days after operational readiness date, we should go into operation revenue service. And if we get done a few days earlier, we can do that. But ultimately, though, it's the board determination that's acceptable.
Thank you.
Yeah, just two quick points. I just wanted to piggyback on what Tom said and encourage other board members to go out and take the tour. It's a very enlightening experience, and I certainly enjoyed it. And I'm sure Kathy would join me in saying, please come on out and spend a lot of dollars in Fairfax while you take the tour. We'd greatly appreciate it. The second point is from a momentum perspective, since Mary mentioned that, I think it's well to note that as a result of the election on Tuesday, we have a governor-elect who is fully committed to phase two of the Silver Line, which is not an unimportant point as we plan going forward. So we feel very good about that.
Ms. Hampton-Cohen.
Just a question on staffing. I was looking at the percentage of positions filled, and I know consistent with our commitment for upward mobility, I assume that we have employees who have applied for these positions who are currently employed. So trying to get a sense of what percentage of our current employees, and then how is that impacting and backfilling vacancies that are created based on going to these positions?
We can certainly get those numbers for you. That won't be a problem, understanding that most of the positions here were entry-level positions, you know, for new train operators, which we get from the bus operators, and also the technicians were entry-level technicians. So there, you'll see the majority of these being entry-level positions on this, but we do have other positions, and absolutely, we look internally, we'll be able to get those numbers.
The key thing is that the people actually working on Silver Line won't necessarily be entry-level people, because there's a whole pick that goes on. So
correct.
This looks like an attractive run to folks. Seniority will govern.
Mr. Bolden?
Lynn, I'm on the Metro's website right now. You know, new station, stairs open in Bethesda. Where's the Silver Line link?
So you can get there from the news bar, but the marquee that you're looking at, which rotates every day, just shows the most recent thing that we've done. As we approach ORD, you're going to see Silver Line up there
on
the marquee on the homepage
on the
very frequently, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Back to Tony's question from before, because I don't see a link here right now.
So on health.com.
Is it? That was really very helpful, Michael. I will go there now. Search. Okay.
Okay. There we go. All righty. Any other questions?
I'd be happy to show you.
Yes. I'm sorry, Tom.
Having taken the tour, I was impressed with the design of the stations, how light, how much of a significant change from current design standards. I think that's a good thing. I was struck by the fact that there are now restroom facilities at these stations, and the staff is ambivalent about whether or not we actually talk about them. I think it's worth resolving the issue about how we put information in the system about restrooms at facilities and how we talk about them, rather than having them be an undiscovered and ambivalent resource for our customers. I know there are concerns about utilization, safety, security, et cetera. I think it's important to resolve those before we open, about how we characterize them and our own plans for the operation and maintenance of those facilities. In other words, I don't think it's good to kind of stumble into it, because I think they can be a asset for the riders. The second was seeing all of that new cubic equipment for fare collection that has probably a 24 to 36 month life expectancy before we change out all of it to new fare collection systems. And the question it raises is it possible to mesh the time frame for the new fare collection systems with phase two design and planning? And because that's a significant investment, and I hope we can take advantage of making the schedules mesh.
I think from a timing standpoint for phase two, the NEP project should be fully developed and well on the way that we should be able to make those decisions based on phase two.
The last comment is that it is easy to lose sight of bike and pedestrian access in the station development and planning process. It's often an afterthought. Bike and pedestrian access is the fastest growing demand item in our system as more people begin to bike and more people begin to walk the systems or to the stations. One of the stations had 12 U-tubes that could at maximum accommodate 24 bikes. When I asked the individual who was doing the IMWA part of the tour about bike and pedestrian access planning, I think it's not unfair to say that they don't do bike and pedestrian.
They really don't.
They don't.
the jurisdiction.
Well, but it's also the on-site capacities at the stations themselves. It's also lighting for bike and pedestrian access on-site and how that intersects with the community. To Ms. Hines' point about the development opportunities here, part of it is the ability to access the community. And I think while part of this is controlled by the jurisdiction, it is part of our responsibility to point out where there are opportunities for expanded bike and pedestrian access. I think we could stand ourselves to look at on station access issues, bike parking, whether it's covered, whether it's lit, and what the stations themselves could stand as that part of the capacity for access. It's a strong suggestion about going forward on phase two about how we handle that part of access on the station planning and design going forward, and whether or not there are other opportunities about on-station capacities for bike and pedestrian access on phase one.
Well, I'd like to answer that one because I think there was something obviously missed in the tour, because that is exactly what is happening. Multiple years, 5 and longer years of bike and pedestrian and roadway interface in order to make sure that this is a really connected community, not just the station, but a really connected community around all of these stations. And so the bike capacity at the parking garage is enormous. It's a safe garage, and the same thing about all the stations. Tyson's came second to the study, but the study was done to provide the bike and pedestrian access to all of the stations there. That is a development that is a new development that will have substantial redevelopment with new street grids that are pedestrian and connected friendly, and the same thing has happened with Wheelie. It is a different kind of station, but the community has the same kind of demands that I think every community has that has the opportunity to have transit there. I think the part that in closing out this section here, we have had partners in this all along the way. And those partners have worked with us to make sure that this is the Metro delivered system that we really talk about in Momentum today, that it needs to be a safe system, but it needs to be a system that is going to integrate our community, be connected, drive the economy, become new neighborhoods throughout the system. So it's there. I think I'm not sure the particular point that you pointed to, but the Wheelie station will probably be the first one because it is the most populated community at this time with residents and businesses. So I think you'll see that happen on day one. We already are ready to bring bike share into the door as we begin making it.
If the way we characterize the phase one of Silver Line has a section in it about bike and pedestrian access, which it doesn't yet, it would be to all of our advantage about being able to talk about the accessibility by bike and pedestrian access to the phase one portion of the system. I don't want it to be lost in the in the newness of all of the capital plan is all.
I think Ms. Farsak could very much take advantage of a lot of the conversations that are already happening in the community. Those are the things that, from a community standpoint, we're driven substantially. I think it also reflects Ms. Hines' comment in that as we come to fruition on this, we're introducing not Tyson's Corner or Wheelie Avenue, but we are really building a regional facility that has greater length and strength throughout the region. So there are places now that we will see people wanting to go because they're going from different parts of the region now, facilitated by an extension. And that's what we really see. It is not just the Silver Line and its five stations. It's really, how do I get from here to Largo and all of the legs in between? And what are those things and how do they improve our ability in the region? And I think that's really what this is about. We are focused on the Silver Line extension, but it really, to me, is the regional access and the extension of what the region is going to see as this phase one goes in and the beginning of phase two and completion. Mr. Down?
Yes, comment and a question. Comment. When I was riding last night, I saw my first Reston Wheelie Avenue sign in the L'Enfant Plaza, so I think this is really happening.
It is.
I hope no one is waiting for the train, however. Question. I took my tour this summer. Being in the neighborhood, it was easier for me to drop by, and discussions were still going on with some of the landholders and office buildings who had passed up the opportunity for good access a while ago, but suddenly realizing that it would be in their interest to do that. Are those discussions completed or still ongoing?
Some are still ongoing.
Yeah.
And I think we would encourage those who have not taken the tour and anyone who wants to retour, that those are some of the discussions you'll see and what that means for those landowners and what it means for us in order of making those facilities accessible and what the agreements are about. So that's it. Any other questions? Ms. Hampshire-Cowan? No? Okay. None? Hearing none. That concludes. We have an oncoming agenda for the next several months. And this one is not the only item that's there. There are quite a few other customer service items that are going to be important to our customers in terms of our value statement and the others that are going to be coming forward. No questions. We're adjourned now. 5 minutes behind. Thank you.